Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We will pour libations at this point. Sifa zote zebnikwa wazewa kale. All praises due to the ancestors. Sifa zote zebnikwa muza. All praises due to the Creator. Sifa zote zebnikwa wazewa kale. All praises due to the ancestors. We call on our ancestors, asking for your energies to come be with us. Empower us as you are empowered, as we offer libations, fresh water to your spirits. We call on the energies of starting with my ancestors, Dorothy Johnson and Benjamin Johnson, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Ida B. Wells, Barbara Sizemore, Ishaka Musa Barashango, Dr. Amos Wilson, the great Leon Thomas, Elijah Muhammad, Harriet Tubman, Thomas Sankara, our recent ancestor, Vinoko Rashidi, and all of our liberation fighting ancestors, known and unknown. We give you thanks. We say Asante. Again, empower us as you are empowered, as we do the work of liberation. Ashe, 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 oh.
Yay.
This time we're going to do Uhuru Sasa.
Sa 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 s
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people what they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Hotep, and greetings to all of you, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host for the evening. We have a wonderful and exciting program for you today, and we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. Just like to let you know that we appreciate your patronage. We appreciate you tuning in to us and being the supporter that you have always been. We are a call-in format, so any of you during the broadcast would like to call in and give your comments or either ask a question, you can do so at area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215-490-9832. And we would be more than happy to involve you in the conversation and entertain any questions that you might have. I wanted you to also know that all of our programs are archived. You can go to the search portal at timeforawakening.com, put in the Black Reality Think Tank, and you can listen to any of our programs in the past 24/7. You can also go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page and also listen to any of the programs that are there. As we have been having a wonderful Black Liberation Month presentation last week, we had a wonderful young lady by the name of Tiffany Drayton. She was from Trinidad. She wrote a book called African American Legacy. And so that was an exciting piece of work. And she was able to discuss with us some of the things that she was trying to say. And as you know, today her book is released, is being released, and it goes on sale. So those of you who have not gotten it, please, by all means, do so. We are looking forward to the rest of February. This is, you know, Black History Month, but for us here at the Black Reality Think Tank, every Tuesday is Black History Month, 365 days a year. So right now I want to talk just a little bit about our discussion for today. Freedom School Now. That is what we are going to be talking about. We have a wonderful group of young people who have agreed to join us and discuss a school that we talked about maybe back during the Kwanzaa celebration. They came on and gave us a very lively discussion, and we appreciate that. We talked a little bit about the history of the school and the purpose and why. And then they just had a good old time reuniting with each other. And we got a chance to feel the spirit of all of that as it flowed through them, as it passed on to us, which gave us an opportunity to see how vital this school, very much like our African tradition that we are trying to look at and duplicate again in our lives. And so that was a wonderful program. And then tonight we are going to discuss with them again the principles of this wonderful school. And also we want to talk to our audience, our listening audience, and encourage them to look in your community and see if there's something like this that you can implement or put in place. One of the things that we consistently talk about here at the Black Reality Think Tank are the community school idea. And looking at that, we call it Saturday schools, community schools, whatever name you want to use, but we want to encourage you to do that. And so we're going to ask someone who has obviously done an excellent job of carrying this through, has been very successful and have built a wonderful institution in the, something called the East, and made a major difference in the largest city in America, which was the great New York City, Brooklyn. Make sure I distinguish between New York City and Brooklyn. Brooklynites don't like that. So, but anyway, yes, a wonderful, wonderful school that was developed back during the 70s, 80s. And we were fortunate to learn about the East from one of our listeners, one of our Black Reality Think Tank family members, Miss Bernice Wayan. She's here with us too. And she's going to talk a little bit with us. And so she has been encouraging us, you know, over the life of the program and broadcast that we're doing, that we should look at that. And particularly as we talked about independent education for our children. And so tonight we are going to do that. We have asked Brother Maliki Oluwambe, Brother Raphael Jackson, Sister Malika Iman, and Benisa Iyan, who have been very instrumental in the development of this program, to join us here tonight and talk a little bit about the East. The East was an educational and cultural center that was founded in 1969 in Brooklyn, New York, by a group of including students from the African American Student Association, better known as ASA, and Jitu Wiyusi. Les Campbell, as his name was, the East was a cultural, educational, and arts organization based on principles of self-determination, nation-building, and Black consciousness. It was originally located at 10 Claver Place in Bedford-Stuyvesant neighborhood of Brooklyn, and the East served as a center for many cultural, educational, and community activities. It provided daycare for children, evening classes for adults, and it served as a home for Black News, a bookstore, a restaurant, catering service, food co-op, and a biweekly National Black Nationalist news publication. The East functioned as home to an independent African-centered school named Yuuru Sasa Shule, whose name translates to Freedom Now. And so tonight we are going to talk with them, and we're going to ask them, what can folks who are interested in doing, how can they start and build an institution like this? What are some pointers that we can give to individuals? That is our goal. That is the main purpose that we want to talk about tonight. How can we build that within our communities, ourselves? And so we will be looking for them to guide us. Beginning our conversation, I have asked Sister Bernice Wayan to begin, and then we will flow along as we continue the conversation. So with that, Sister Yan, good afternoon, good evening, and we'd ask you to start right in.
All right. Peace and love. Abarigani. How's everybody doing?
Jema Sante, Abarigani.
And Jema, and Jema. We were starting off speaking Swahili, which we spoke at the East, so that's a beautiful thing. So I think we should start off, or we'd like to start off that way, with asking Brother Maliki to give us a very short, brief summary of the beginning of the East and foundational information that we talked about in the previous broadcast. So if you just give us a quick summary for those who didn't hear the first broadcast.
Okay. Peace and blessings, everyone. This program is very important because what happened in Brooklyn, 1969, 1970, happened with teenagers. They weren't 20, they weren't 30, they weren't 40, they were 14, we were 14 and 15 years old. And so we're letting you know that you don't have to be this, you know, adult person to create something that can serve your community. So when we, as we said in the other program we went back, we talked about the fact that all praise to our our leader, Brother G2 Wayusi, and director of ASA, who's with the ancestors now. You know, we, out of the struggle in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, if you know the struggle of Ocean Hill, Brownsville, was a struggle for community control. The Board of Education decided that they were going to give the community a say-so in the school, and then the community, of course, took the say-so and, you know, began to look at the school and see what changes were needed in the school. But even before that, I want to say, let's give credit to ASA, the African American Students Association, who without them, the foundation would have never begun. We, as students, 14, 15 years old in high school, now started to organize in the New York City high schools of demands that we wanted to be implemented in our high school. We had a chapter in every high school in New York City. The demands were, we wanted Black History taught. We wanted our parents to have access to the school 24/7. Okay? These are some of the demands that we talked about, and we wanted them implemented, and we were willing to do whatever necessary to get them implemented. So as we struggled in the New York City school system, we said, wait a minute, hold it. Because, of course, when the African American Teachers Association came in and started bringing in more Black teachers to implement Black history, which was very important in the school at the time we wanted, the New York City Teachers Union went on strike. And so now the Board of Ed said, hey, wait a minute, we taking it back. And the community said, you're not taking anything back. We are going to take control of our school. So as a result of that struggle that went on, we said, wait a minute, hold it. We need our own. We can't be out here fighting with these people every day where they're going to give us and then they're going to take and, you know, they're giving you and take it back. We need our own. So now the student organization, African American Students Association, started now to look with G2 Wayusi for a building where we could establish a cultural and educational institution. And we found that building on 10 Claver Place in Brooklyn. We bought the building, we cleaned it out, and I'm giving credit to those who were there. Brother Raphael was there, Imari, Akili, Ayala Van Zant, you name it. These are many of the students at Dahani, Jumba, Sulima, all of the students who were there cleaned this building out to make it the institution that it became, okay? So now, once we got the building, we cleaned it out, we all got together, sat down, and said, what kind of program do we need? We understood we needed a very good cultural program because we know culture of a people is the most important thing, and we mm-hmm. need an educational program because now we need our own school. We can't be going out here begging for a school where they're going to take it and give it back to us. So that's when the East began.
Ashe, thank you for that. I want to ask each person that's on the line, the three brothers and sisters, what you just talked about, the way you described it, Maliki, I heard a level of determination. You would, the students and under the leadership of G2 Wayusi, Baba G2 Wayusi, and by the way, I must call on him, his ancestral energy, to be here with us. I neglected to do that, but and I say Ashe to that. But the level of determination of doing for self without somebody telling you, you know, or indoctrinating you in some kind of way, was so powerful. What was the energy? What was happening around that time that created such a determination? Let's start, Brother Raphael. Can you would you give me your feedback on that one?
Well, it was things were happening. A lot of our parents were either immigrants or migrants to the North, and they wanted something better. and they instilled in their children to get something better and do better. And then when we had all of these other influences, these positive influences around, there was no stopping us. There was no, you know, we weren't burdened by distractions. And then young people, even in the military takes you at 17. They don't want you older because they know that they cannot mold you after you get to a certain age. When you're young, you're fearless. You are fearless, and we were fearless. Sometimes I look back and say, whoa, whoa, we were bold. So it was that the spirit of the time. You had a lot going on, and then youth put together, and we're just going to do it.
I say, Sister Malika.
Yes.
Respond to that question.
Well, I think that during that time, we have to remember that in 65 we lost one of our greatest dynamic heroes,
yes,
was Minister Malcolm. And I know that a lot of the youth were listening, have listened to him, and were fired up to make change. I know that personally on we were with the Nation of Islam, my family and I, and we left when Minister Malcolm left. And from there, we went into the Black Arts Movement and the Black Power Movement. So when we finally landed at the East and saw what was going on, that was something that wasn't so surprising, but was more or less, we felt a great pride in knowing that we were amongst people who were listening, who had the consciousness and the determination, the self-determination that Minister Malcolm talked so much about in creating, in building institutions for ourselves. So I think that whole energy during the late 60s and going into the early 70s, it was an energy of power, of strength, of fire, of self-determination to make things happen, to make change in our community.
I share. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that.
I think once you got a little inkling of what you were really about and how great you really were, that was the stepping stone to take you to the next level to say, okay, now what are we going to do? We knew we were great. What do we need to do to continue and be great again? Coming from Africa as slaves, you see? So that's why the history was so important. Once that seed was planted, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Now, action was required. And as young people, we understood that, wait a minute, don't tell us that it's about partying and hanging out, okay? Because we want to do something. Partying and hanging out ain't going to create nothing. You're just going to be feeling good for them hours you party, and then when you go back home, you're facing the same thing. So it's about what can we do to make a change? And that was the vision that G2 Ayusi had, that young people were the people who were going to get involved to make the change come about. So once that history, that seed was planted of look how great you were, look what you were doing in these great societies, look what you can do now, you realize how great you were, now you knew what you needed to do to become great again and do great things. History.
I say, I'll say for me, Black Power you know, just to add to what everybody was saying, Black power was in the air all over the nation, the call for Black power. And I have to say, when I was 12 years old, I was attending Winthrop Junior High School, and Angela Davis was my idol. I didn't know too much about, you know, the dynamics of the struggle, but I knew that we were an oppressed people. And so I actually organized my whole junior high school and fought until we got, just what you said, Maliki, fought to get African history, Black history taught in the schools. And we had a fighting spirit. It was just in the air all over the nation. Because I was wondering why, you know, why everything we did just was successful. And it was in the air. We were all, Black folk were ready to fight. We were done talking. We wanted to fight and get what we want and practice that self-determination.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point.
Yes.
And, you know, even, if I could just add, even the social and cultural activities of the community were geared toward that attitude. I remember To Be Young, Gifted, and Black that had come out about that time. And as you said, Say It Loud, Dina, Black Dina. And Prayer, all of that was, even the movies that were coming out had a different wing to them. And so in a sense, everything was supportive around that idea. And it opened.
It was a movement.
Movement.
It was a movement happening.
That's right. That's correct.
And to quote G2 Weusi, who was our great, great leader, he said that the glue that held everything together with the East was the philosophy, together was the philosophy and the belief in Black nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Not integration, not, you know, equality and all that stuff, but Black nationalism. That was the glue that held it together. And I thought that was so powerful. And that he held fast to the teachings of the recently assassinated Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Malcolm had just been assassinated.
And our mission had to be to get us together. We couldn't be organizing nobody else until we got our own people together.
Right. That's right.
And that's where that thought comes from. You know, of Black nationalism. We have to work on ourselves, work on our people in order to get us to a better place, you know?
Sister Yan, could you maybe talk just a little bit about this visionary leader that was leading the East and, you know, what was a little of his background? Give us some idea about that because, you know, clearly you recognize sometimes it takes that kind of energy and kind of vision to get things moving. Tell us a little bit about Jitu and his work and his philosophy, you know, how all of that came about.
Okay, now I want to clarify that I was I came in after the East had been established.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
As a student. So that question I want to direct to those that were in the beginning, that were working in the beginning. I know Maliki was like, you could tell yourself, Maliki, you were like right there with G2 Weusi. So you were one of the people that would know more than anyone else or know better.
So give me the question again, Brother Rogers.
Just a little of his background. What was his indoctrination philosophically?
Well, G2 was an educator,
okay.
Number one.
Okay.
And he was a history teacher.
Ah, gotcha.
Okay. And he taught in all of the New York City. He taught in New York City schools, and he also was a leader in many of the New York City summer programs,
mm-hmm.
which was very important. In other words, when school wasn't happening in the summer, now he was directing summer programs, Youth in Action, Model Cities, which was a big thing happening in New York at the time, and. Also, the other thing about G2 is that his parents was very active in the struggle of our people. I remember him telling me how his father took him to an event where he first met Paul Robeson, you know? So they were instilling in him at the time as a youngster the importance of, you know, uplifting our people and the struggle of our people and what we needed to do to continue, you know, moving our people forward. So when you look at where he came from, he's born in Brooklyn, raised in Brooklyn, and then was part of the educational system of New York City. He was able to see it all and then was able to see that, hey, wait a minute, we can only go so far with this. We have to take it to another level and we need our own. So, and he was a person that was very sincere, very honest with you. And one thing he was able to do, he could watch every young person that was there, and it was hundreds, and see what it is that was within you that where you could fit in best in the organization, where you could perform well and do good. You know, he was able to see that in you. He would watch you. And then if you came to him and said, well, look, I can't do that. I can't handle it. He said, okay, well, let's try this. Let's try to do this, you know? So you worked in the kitchen, you worked in the newspaper, you worked in the school, you worked on the weekends with the music program, you worked in the bookstore, you was at the food store. So wherever you were needed and whatever you wanted to try, he was willing to give you that opportunity.
Excellent.
That's the kind of person he was, and always sincere and always had heart to get out there and fight. You know what I'm saying? And as he talked about the respect and the sacrifice of the struggle that we needed to make in order to make things happen and progress our people. So struggle and sacrifice was very important. Like I said, you think we could do what we was doing, out partying every weekend? No. You know what I'm saying? You think we could do hanging out? No. Because we had to do sometimes work 24/7 a day, 24/7, 24 hours a day in the building, keeping it running, keeping it happening.
Right.
So that was the kind of person he was, and that's why we love and respect him so much.
Powerful.
Miss him so
powerful.
Much.
Can I throw this in? If you know Maliki, you know G2.
Okay.
Now, Maliki's not going to say, oh, he'll say it in private, but G2 is Maliki's father.
He's
if
all
you
of
understand.
Our
all of our fathers, but, you know, he is the, you know, the embodiment of G2, you just got to look at Maliki.
Beautiful.
Now,
beautiful.
I want to throw in this because in this, I met G2 when I was in one of the summer programs when I was 10 years old. And we used to call him Watusi Less because he was so tall. You know, and I guess they thought they were disrespecting him by calling him a Watusi. But, man, he was awesome. And then another thing, he was an athlete. He was a super ball player. He could play ball. So you get someone from the community who loves his people and who can play basketball, and you know, we'd look up to basketball. We, you know, we'd look
right,
up to
right.
athletes. And there he was. And one of the things that he was not an intellectual egghead. He knew his people. He loved his people.
Yes.
And he was with his people. There was no such thing, well, I can't deal with you because you don't do this. G2 was a man of the people. The community loved him. Very few people. He was like on the level, almost on the same level as Malcolm. And I'll put myself out there to say that. I haven't seen any leader outside of Malcolm who could do what G2 did, could walk the streets like G2 and get the respect from everybody in the street, everybody in the churches, everybody in the schools. When you said G2 or Les Campbell at that time, you got respect. He got respect. And that's one of the interesting components because, you know, yes, he was very smart, went to Long Island University. His grandson played with the and was playing, was an NBA ball player. So this is no, I read a book and I'm going to try to do something for black people, brother.
Right,
You know what I mean?
Let me just say this real quick. Let me just say this real quick. He was like a father to all of us. We got together. He took us to Bermuda. We took a show there to perform in Bermuda. A brother who was had a progressive organization invited us. We took a show there with poetry, with jazz. With, they wouldn't even let black books in the country at the time. We happened to get two cases of black books in the place at the time. Then he sent me to Guyana. He sent me to Trinidad. He was a father, and he was the person that, you know, he showed you, he took us and showed us everything. And everyone who, let me tell you, at his funeral service, all of us were gathered around, and all of us who from teenagers who were adults now were crying and said, if it wasn't for G2, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
That's right. That's right.
Definitely painted a powerful picture of
doctors, of, lawyers, judges,
everybody. Powerful picture. I wanted to just let our listening audience know this is the Black Reality Think Tank. We have a large number of people that are on the internet right now, and if you wish to call in and give us your comments or either ask the question, you can do so at area code 215-490-9832. We're going to open up the lines in a little while, let you ask questions. Again, we are talking about the East, and we are looking at the development of it, the pillars, the cornerstones that set this powerful program in place. And we want to take a look at how can we do it now in our community. I don't believe that this cannot be done now. We may not have a charismatic figure as that, but there are some folk out there who are strong, who can do some things that way. And we want to encourage them to come forward. Our children are hurting, as you know, and particularly now with the COVID, and they've had to go to school virtually, and all of the damage that that's going to cause in some cases. But we need to have a program like this in place, and that's why I'm so happy that we are able to do this, and so happy that those of you who represent these have willing to come forward and do that. If I may,
one of the things we need to do now is that we need to go to our neighbors. We need to get in our community.
Yes.
And we need to gather and look at the things that needs to be addressed immediately. One of the things you see going on right now, they're talking about crime. They're talking about guns. Where are the jobs? Are the jobs? Okay? Well, every news station I see talking about a killing, I want to see a program talking about here's a skill, here's some plumbing, here's some contract, you know what I'm saying? Here's an electrician job. Where the job? So let's get in that community, connect with our neighbors, and then let's go to the politicians. Here, I'm telling you how to start. Let's go to the politicians and say, wait a minute, we want a building. You got all of these dilapidated buildings out here. You got them standing out here doing nothing, making the community look bad. We need a building. We'll take it. We'll fix it up. We'll make it something so it can serve the community.
Excellent, boy. Excellent. Yes, indeed.
This is an opportunity to talk for a minute about black nationalism.
Okay.
Because a lot of people in this era that we're in, black nationalism is actually kind of irrelevant. They don't understand it. They put it down. We're in a time where, you know, we need people talking about intersectionality and all people that are oppressed, you know, need to get together, this and that, and do it, you know, Martin Luther King's way. We're moving backward, back away from nationalism. And from my experience, nationalism works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like, I want to ask, you know, each one just to say a little bit about why black nationalism worked for the East. Because it could have been, you know, Marxism or something like that was used. But black nationalism was used. And why was it effective? Because one thing we know we need, whatever ideology or whatever you use, there has to be unity and organization. Those have to be founded on those two things. So Each one, whoever wants to start. Well, I'll start with Sister Malika because I hadn't had.
Well, let me add to that that you're asking, which is a very good idea. I'd like to hear that for the sake of our audience that may not be quite familiar with the concept of nationalism, that if someone would define it as you describe it a little bit. Give us a working definition of being what it means to be a nationalist.
Sister Malika?
Okay, well, we used to say, what time is it? It's nation time.
Nation time.
It's nation time, and land is going to change hands. And, you know, the way we, what that means for us is that it's about us building our own nation within the nation. This is what we were striving to do. And doing it in the way that resonates with us as an African people or people of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of building, like you said, brother, we need to, you know, have more institutions or schools like this. There are some out here, but one of the main things I feel is that we have to make sure we have the proper value system in order to build and have this like-minded consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And when my family came to the East and Baba G2 was building the Uhuru Saka School, he wanted an African-centric philosophy, a tradition, and more or less a lifestyle that we can all adhere to and be recognized as people of African descent. And that was the philosophy of Kawaita, tradition and reason,
right.
coming from Malana, which means tradition and reason, and is based on the Nguza Saba, the seven principles, which Kwanzaa, which is the foundation for Kwanzaa. Those seven principles, of course, Umoja, unity, and Kujichagulia, self-determination that we were talking about earlier, determination that we all had back, you know, in making this all happen and making the change in the community. Ujima, cooperative economics, mm-hmm. and Nia, purpose, Kawumba, creativity, and Imani, faith. All of these principles is part of the value system of Kawaita.
Great.
We say tradition and reasoning because we're here in the West. We're here in America. And that everything that was done in Africa, we cannot apply here. We have to be reasonable. We have to have some common sense about certain values and lifestyles that can be applied here in the West while we are here in the West. And so Kawaita is based on that principle of being reasonable about how we can still be of an African-centered person and doing things communally and within, you know, reaching the masses of our people in a most positive and effective way. So I think that, like I said, although I know of some schools that are trying to move in the direction of what Uhuru Saka was, I know there's a brother, Umar Johnson. He is trying to start a school, the Frederick Douglass School, I think somewhere in Philadelphia, and it's very much based on
right.
Black nationalism,
mm-hmm.
and these principles that I just spoke of, the Nguza Saba and things like that, which is wonderful. One thing I would like to, you know, highlight is that Brother G2 was such a visionary. He was a very powerful genius, yes, academically. And he took his academics to the level of raising consciousness. And as a man of being an academic and educator, he formed the Council of Independent Black Institutions that was a coalition of all the black independent schools throughout this nation to have a have this value system of what the Nguzu Saba is about, of what Kawaida is about, and that was through the nation. There were numerous schools. Some are still in existence, some not. Some are defunct right now, but, you know, still, he had that vision to not just leave it exclusively in Bed-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, at 10 Claver Place.
Right.
This organization, we call it CB. It was CB, Council of Independent Black Institutions. And every city or state that wanted to form a school of African consciousness and African-centered qualities and lifestyle and traditions was part of this organization. So I just wanted to be, you know...
Let me ask one question.
Amongst the many other things he did.
Sister Malika, let me ask you one question. I know you said earlier that you all had a wonderful relationship, or actually were indulged in the Nation of Islam. I had an opportunity to visit the university over in Chicago, and it seems that they were very strict on implementing a curriculum very similar to that, and obviously it would have to embrace some forms of Islam. But I think it was Sister Ava. I had a chance to talk with her once, and she was explaining that that was a strong critical area where, and I know this is before your father's work was before this, the nation had gone to that level. But is there some similarity there between those two curriculums and the type of thing that the nation is doing now and what you all were doing back in the early 70s?
Answer that.
The nation is based on Islam.
Right, right. I know.
The East was non-sectarian, non-denominational, and and the East was open to everyone. Mm-hmm. They had every religious group coming through the East. You know, it wasn't exclusive. So, no, in a way it wasn't, but everybody was respected from where their consciousness was, religiously speaking.
My brother
Raphael.
Okay, I was a part of the Nation of Islam. Okay. And what we have to look at is the progression of certain things.
Right.
Booker Washington set the example with Tuskegee.
Yes. Theory.
Garvey wanted to emulate what Booker T. Washington was doing in the Caribbean. You've got Booker T. Washington's model. Marcus Garvey takes the model. Marcus Garvey interjects Africa into it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad takes Garvey's model, which is Booker T. Washington's model, introduces Islam into it. We use the same model.
Excellent.
Even in the, I can't talk about what's happening now with the nation. But back then, it's just like the Catholic schools. Mm-hmm. A lot of people went to Catholic school just for the education. They didn't go for the catechism. So many, because they said, look, if they're going to teach me how to read and write, you know, I don't have to go to the catechism class. All I want to do is learn to read, write, and multiply.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens with the Nation of Islam back in the days, that's the way it was, too.
Yes.
People wanted their kids in a safe environment.
Right.
The East, we used to discuss this a lot, almost the cultural wing. We took the militancy. We took the discipline from the Nation of Islam and implied and put it into our school, Huru Sasa. My daughter went there. It was the similar model, but with a different emphasis. Because if a kid can see, it's ludicrous to teach a kid, yeah, we great, and they can't read. If you can read, you know, okay, you tell her, we're great people, we built the pyramids, and put Sheikh Anta Diop's book in his hand. He's like, I can't read, I don't understand what he's saying. So the basis in G2's main thing was education.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start reading, you can't shackle your mind anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if you can get them just to repeat stuff and not even analyze it, not even look at it critically, and that's what Uru Sasa did. Look at the great people who came. Maliki, you graduated from there, right?
Yeah, I
graduated.
Yeah,
she graduated.
Yes.
When my daughter came out of Uru Sasa, she was skipped 2 grades.
Hmm.
2 grades. So, the you know, like everybody, you know, not, you know, it's like the Panthers. Everybody's focusing on the guns that they had, not the programs.
Mm-hmm.
So, black nationalism, it's almost intrinsic. If you got a black teacher in front of you, now I'm not talking about these coons that are teaching our kids now, but you've got a teacher in front of you teaching you how to read and write and be proud of yourself, and you don't have to bang it over someone's head.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at exactly what you're saying now. Look at the genius of a G2AUC. We could have that consciousness, we could have that ideology, but we never had it to the degree that it was sectarian. It was above the community. It was above everybody. You know what I used to, you know what we used to say when we opened the building? People used to look down on people who didn't have a big afro.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you know what we used to say? It ain't what's on your head, it's what's in it. So no matter how you came,
you were one with
open arms. Come on. And that's what made people, this is a lesson now to all of us who are talking about culture and, you know, nationalism. It's a lesson. We can have it. And if it's for real, it can relate to everyone. Okay? Just like, you know, students, there were students when we were getting hit upside the head and we was telling them about ASA, they didn't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got hit upside the head, here they came. Hey, what was that y'all were talking about? What was that Malcolm F. stuff y'all were talking about? So it's a process,
right.
And we
yes.
have to be able to relate to everyone.
Great, great.
Absolutely. And that was the beauty of the East.
That's right.
That everyone was welcome. You were welcome to come in and cheer and, you know, give. And, you know, you also had to come to do something to be a part of it, not just to teach, but just to also be about doing something. That's one thing about Baba G too. He was a doer. He just
mm-hmm.
he was not just a talker. He was also a doer. He got
mm-hmm.
down with us, the grassroots. He was the man of the grassroots community. You know, he was the king of the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
He was respected with the church people.
Yes.
And very
yes.
few of our people going to talk to church people now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they say,
yeah.
we say we love our people, but you're scared to go talk to the church people. You're scared to go to talk to the church, the praise singers, and, you know, in the church. He was there. They loved
yeah.
him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They loved
yeah.
him. That was the key. We weren't
and the
into
the bills contributed
mm-hmm.
to the building of the school, correct?
What's that?
The churches, their pastors that
sure,
contributed
sure,
to the building
sure.
of the school.
Sure, when the programs
Reverend
when they were starting the educational
Jones.
Program. Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jones. We used to have, as you said, we used to have the after school, some of the summer programs in their churches. The mosques, the Muslims, you know, they used to do a lot of the security.
Yes.
So it was. It wasn't, it, you know, it wasn't... So
it
cultish.
Wasn't exclusive at all.
No, it was, you know.
So I asked, you know, this piece about black nationalism because, again, this is so important. As I listen to young activists now, they're not talking about, it's like they're afraid to talk about black nationalism because now you're, you know, censored and put down for being a separatist or whatever nonsense that this current, you know, culture
okay,
is doing.
I want people personally, because
I'm so passionate about nationalism, to understand the importance of it because there's a very common sense issue here. And you mentioned Umar Johnson. Umar always talks about how every other people group practices nationalism.
That's right.
But here they go telling us that we shouldn't practice nationalism or else that's racist.
Right, right.
But, you know, there is a Chinatown. Wherever you go where Chinese are, there is a Chinatown. There's an Arab section. People come together
everywhere all over the world
in their culture and to take care of their people. So why is it a crime for us? And I really want our people to hear that.
Right.
Yes.
I want let me just, you said something very powerful, and what it is that you were able to get the community to work together, and that's a real critical part because
that's the key.
Not
that's
able
key.
To do that right now, and I was living in New York at the time, and I lived on Sutter Avenue over in. East New York area.
That's Malika's territory.
I live right there.
Me and Malika's territory.
Stomping ground.
Yep. Right. That's where I lived. And
East New York.
And I was looking for a school for my children. And at that time, they were kind of young. They were still early elementary school age. And I had gone over to Concord Baptist Church to see what they had. Because I know they had a powerful school. And again, but I was hesitant about some things that I saw that didn't meet my, desire. And one of them was that they didn't seem to have a grip on that community. I think Concord was on, what, Gates Avenue, I think, something like that?
No, Concord's on
Marcy,
isn't it? On Marcy?
Marcy, that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So did you work? What about that? Gardner Taylor was... clearly one of those...
Gardner Taylor, the preacher's preacher.
Yeah,
thing is, brother, here's what happens.
Okay.
We say nationalism.
Okay.
See, we're going back to the book. Well, this is what nationalism is. No, it could be that. Nationalism is when you go into a store, a black store, and the person treats you with the utmost respect.
Right.
The utmost respect. That's when you build the rapport. You don't have to call it nationalism. And that's what people are looking at. People say, well, they're not a black nationalist organization. The Muslims, when you would go into their store,
yes.
They'd greet you. The place was clean. Everything. That was building a spirit. So when you look at anybody who speaks Spanish knows. You go into a Spanish-speaking bodega and say something in Spanish, you're going to get a better price.
Right. Right.
Right, they ain't
exactly
mean mugging.
Right.
They're mean mugging you. They think you black. Then you say something. Then it's okay.
That's right.
This is spirit. We're not looking at an idea of black nationalism. So many of us now have become successful. We don't live in the Brooklyn black neighborhoods anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids grow up with other kids.
Right. Exactly.
So they're in these integrated. So when they hear you talk about, black people, this and this and this, of course, that's the first thing you're going to say, well, Dad, you got something against white people?
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing is, I used to tell my white people don't exist. I don't discuss white people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in my realm. Just like at the East. I was reading an article, they said, the East was anti-Semitic. No. White people were not in our equation. It was about us and
that's
how
right.
we treated each other.
Right.
We didn't have to call it this or Kawaida or Umoja. No, when I got money, I went down to the food co-op. When I got my money to entertain. So this is it's the practice, not the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
We're caught up on the terminology. We don't want to talk about black. You don't have to talk about black. All you'd have to do is see it. In action, when you come into someone's house and you see pictures by black artists,
right,
you hear music
right.
by black, you ain't got to say anything.
Now you put it into practice.
Exactly.
See what I'm saying? Now you put it into practice. And here's another thing. We're pointing out all these things in terms of what time is it, nation, not time, and building. G2 always talked about quality. We never did anything halfway.
Right.
This was a very important aspect of this organization and what made it succeed. If we cleaned the bathroom, it was done with pride and quality. It's See what I'm saying? If we sold the newspaper, it was done with pride and quality. When we presented those programs, it was done with pride. You know what I'm saying? In the lecture series, Rap Brown, Stokely, all these people coming to speak because this is what the East was about. And when you went there, you saw pride and quality.
So you did.
So
you didn't,
let me jump in here for a minute.
You didn't talk the talk, you walked the walk. Go ahead, Sister Ann. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
One thing I want to make sure we cover is that some of the things that came out of the East. So we established what the East was. It was established under Black nationalism.
Okay.
And so whatever, you know, we want to call it, you know, in this era, it was nation building time. And so, you know, the root word of nationalism. But what else came out of it? We had the Uhuru Sasa Shule, the school, and we had preschool to what? High school?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What not? And then there were businesses that came out of it. There were organizations came out of it. There were many things born out of the East. That's why, you know, I emphasize it wasn't just a school. It was about... Really, for me, it was about re-Africanizing us. You have to know who you are. And for what the East did for me, it re-Africanized me. It showed me the beauty of who I was as an African. And I was able to learn easily. I've always, you know, that was always easy for me. But it was a beautiful experience because people taught me that loved me.
And when I met you, I saw that. When I first met you, I saw that spirit in you. And I didn't know anything about where you had been, what you had done, anything. But I saw that in you.
Now we're learning that we can do something together.
Yes.
We're not divided no more.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can come together and come to a black school.
Right.
That we can see that, look what, you know how we say other people do, that we can't do, but now the East built that philosophy, you know. Now here we're coming together. You're seeing a school. You're seeing entertainment.
Right.
You're seeing economic development. You're seeing stores. You're seeing shops. You're saying, wow, you know.
Maliki, if each one of you would list maybe, you know, in your area, your focus area, what came out of the East, because so much came out of that. Did it start as a school, or did it start as a cultural center? Which one did it start as?
Well, the weekend started with the music first.
Okay.
And then the school came a little after, within the same year, though, within the same year.
Okay.
But now what you're doing is the word is out like wildfire all over the country. Go see what these young people are doing. Now Detroit, Chicago, they're getting the word. Hey man, this place in Brooklyn, you gotta see what they do. They got music, they got a school, they got stores, you gotta go. And now people are coming to see. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so list some of those, Maliki, because I want people to know what was born out of this nation building process.
Well, one of the things, because I was
the CIBI.
What is that you said?
Malika mentioned CIBI. Malika,
yeah,
did you
go ahead,
start?
Malika.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the organizations that developed from the East, the CB.
Yeah.
Can you give us a list of organizations that you're aware of that came out?
I don't have that.
Well, you got Little Sun People that's existing now, independent black school, a school in Brooklyn, Little Sun People.
Okay. So we talked about the store,
there was a Wayusi Shule, Ayana Johnson, Wayusi Shule, there was ZD Kuwa with Sister Rashida.
Al Kareem.
And then there was the schools outside of New York City in Philly, and that I don't recall the names of, but
Churchville.
Tom? I'm sorry.
I said Veterans for Black Justice with Job Mashariki.
Veterans of Black Justice?
Yeah. Job,
some of those organizations.
Black Veterans for Social Justice. And I should also make note that we do forget I worked with G2 as his secretary for one of his organizations, and it was the Randolph Evans. Randolph Evans, who was a young brother that got killed, and they had he had formed an organization around that whole situation in his name, and it served the community again. And I remember G2, he was like I said, he was like the king of the grassroots movement, in my opinion, because he served these people, the elders. They had, were giving out food, you know, in the cold. The lines were so long, but he was a man of the community. And yes, any which way he was able to serve, he served. Then he made so many positive alliances with other organizations, not just with the Meet Barack with Seed Fund, but I mean there were so many other people. He worked with Abu Badika, Sonny Carson, and know RNA. This is why we had
school,
so many
the School of Common Sense
coming
the
through
school of Common
year.
Sense.
Right.
Okay, the School of Common Sense, all of that. And in terms of the churches, he was closely aligned with Reverend Daughtry and the Black United
Front. I was just
going to
say it, Malika. That's what brought him in the struggle.
The Black
East.
United
that's
Front.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
That's what Reverend Daughtry
one
brought
at a time,
his
please. One at a time, please. We hear you all. One at a time, please.
Okay, now you're getting excited.
Hey, like I said, he was aligned with the churches, and one of the main churches was Reverend Daughtry's House of the Lord Church. And you know, we know Reverend Daughtry is a revolutionary pastor. He's our revolutionary pastor of the community, and he was very, very instrumental in making sure the Black United Front exists and stayed, and they stayed on it in terms of every protest and community event going on, whatever was happening in the community that needed attention, police brutality, you know,
exactly,
poverty, housing, Black United Front was on it. And this was all happening while the East was still around. All of this G2 was a part of.
Sister Yan, I got to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. Got to pay a couple of bills here. And we'll come back. It's a very short break. And we'll come back. This is a very rich conversation. You know what happens around this time. The clock starts running away. And there are a couple of things
Let's
that we haven't
in.
We haven't
yeah,
talked
come
about.
Come on, because I want to list these organizations.
But wait, Sister Yan, I got to take a break. Okay?
No, Sam, after you're finished.
Okay, all right. Sounds good.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-
Listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, brothers and sisters, we are back. We want to have a wonderful, rich conversation with the brothers and sisters from the East, one of the most powerful cultural educational centers anywhere in America. And so we're so happy to have a representative group that is here that can tell us and give us the inside tracks to how this all began. I just wanted to let our audience know this is a call-in format. As I said earlier, we have a large amount of people that are on the Internet based on our monitor. You can come in and participate in this conversation by calling area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. And we're going to open those lines up in just a few minutes and give our audience a chance to ask some questions. Just wanted to also remind you that we have other programs that are on the Black Reality Think Tank. We have a program on Thursday evening at 6 p.m. Called Warriors Way, Continuing the Fight with Brother Kwasi Kraft. And that comes on at 6 p.m. Central Time on the Blog Talk radio system. And you can go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page and get that number and link and be able to listen to a wonderful conversation with Brother Kwasi Kraft. And then on Saturday at 3 o'clock, we have another program called Black Sister Talk. Young women, millennial women getting together who are mothers, children. They're talking about things in terms of their health and those things that are very important to mothers and black family. Wonderful conversation. It airs at 3 p.m. Central Time, also on the Block Talk system. And then on Saturday evening at 6, we have another program on the Black Reality Think Tank platform called The Elders of Milwaukee. As the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And this is a group of elders that are coming together, looking at how they can continue to serve the community in their senior years and continue to participate and help doing some of the things that we hear taking place tonight. And so that program airs at 6 o'clock, and it airs on the blog. It airs on the Time for an Awakening Network, which is the 215-490-9832, and you can listen to them on that. So those are our lineups. Also, one other program on the Time for an Awakening is called African Perspectives, a very good program with Brother Oshieme Adelabu, and that program airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 Eastern Time, 11 to 1 Eastern Time. And then we have one other program that we are supportive of. It's called Gospel Gold. It is the history of gospel music in the United States. And that's Reverend Michael Rogers. And that program is going to come back on the air February the 28th. And it is also on the Blog Talk radio system. So those are our programs, our format. We encourage you to listen. We just want to remind our audience, if you could please, if your mic is open on your phone. It's very, very sensitive, and we can pick up the noise. I don't want to mute anybody, but if that noise does come through, we may have to do that. So be mindful, please, of doing that. So, Sister Yan, quickly, though, because I need to ask a couple of questions before we open up the mic. So very quickly with what you wanted to do.
So what I want to let anybody, everyone listening, know what nation building looks like.
Okay.
These are the words of G2AUC. A network of interconnected institutions and businesses grew out of the initial efforts to constantly provide goods, services, and information for the community. These included Uhuru Sasa Shule, which we talked about, which at the height of its development included a nursery, a preschool, and we talked about the schools, the Evening School of Knowledge, that offered a variety of classes and workshops to adults. The weekend sets featuring the best music and culture available. The Universal Temple of Thought. Kuna Nuwana, the Uhuru Food Co-op, one of the first cooperative health food stores. The East Publishers, the East Caterers, Black News, monthly news magazine, Akiba Mku, a bookstore, a view from the East radio program on station WLIB, Mavazi, a clothing store and cultural shop, the African Street Carnival, which evolved into the African Street Festival, and then the International African Arts Festival. The list goes on. So much came out of this nation-building process. That's why I keep stressing it's not just the school. There were things birthed out of that. There were organizations, as the sister says, CIBI. There's one that says N something PO or PD. Anybody know what that is?
Institute of Positive Education. That's with Hakeem Mahabudi from Chicago, Illinois.
Don Lee.
All right. Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
The Parents Council, The weekend sets. I'd like Maliki to talk for a minute about the weekend sets. But if there are any other things that came out of the East, because this is powerful. See, I was a part of the East, but I was young. I didn't know all of this was happening. The trips to Guyana, sending people to Guyana and other things. So, Maliki, you were doing the music and the arts. Can you just talk about that for a couple of minutes? Because Doc is telling us to move it on forward. Can you talk about some of the artists that came?
Yes. The weekend sets were very important because two things were happening. We were providing entertainment for the community and employment for the musicians. So at some point, I began to set up the sound on the weekends for the musicians, and that gave me my career as an audio engineer. So now on the weekends, you got, the word is going out to the musicians, you got to go see what these young people are doing down here. So while we may have a set of Gary Bartz performing, now you got Gil Scott-Heron sitting in the back watching.
Mm.
You got brother Ben Chavis bringing Nina to see Doug and Gene Kahn.
Nina Simone?
That's right. Nina came twice. Ben Chavis brought her once. She never performed, but she came to see the sets. It was so powerful that she heard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then people don't know that, you know, once you came and performed at the East, Aurora Ayres, Alani Liston, Doug and Gene Kahn, now they were on the map because now they're getting exposure and people are buying their albums. You see? People are buying their albums. So the East actually put the Roy Ayers, the Norman Conners, the Lonnie Liston, Smith, all of these people on the map. Rahsaan performing, Freddie Hubbard, Betty Carter lived up the street in Brooklyn. And they had some, and of course Max Roach and Randy Weston, you can't leave them out because they're Brooklyn boys, okay? Whenever they had so, these musicians had so much respect for the East, whenever you would call them, they would come and perform. And the money they're getting these days compared to then was like nothing. So it had such a great effect on the community because now let's go down to the East this weekend. They didn't care who it was because they knew we had music every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So the East put all of these musicians on the map, believe it or not. And, of course, the Norman Conners was performing with, people don't know, jazz musicians perform with each other. The Norman Conners was performing with the Pharoah Sanders.
Right.
Lonnie Liston was in Pharoah Sanders' group, okay? So this is how it evolved, and this is how the music and the culture just spread it all over the world.
That is powerful.
I want to throw in one thing, Maliki. I remember Maliki, he was about 16 years old, negotiating a contract with Pharoah Sanders. I'm like,
oh, my God. Oh,
I'm
damn.
Like,
anyway, next.
He don't like to talk about himself.
Yeah, that's some powerful stuff.
I like to add that it was also a great honor and privilege for my family group. My father started the Wayuusi Kurumba Troupe, and
that's
we would
right.
open up on the weekend
right.
set with our black art dance, African dance and plays
that's
and
right.
theater and poetry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was a family group, but of course, again, it wasn't exclusive because we, you know, my father would allow anyone who wanted to express themselves and show their talent in black artistry.
Right,
yeah.
right.
And that we used to open up for those weekend sets, as well as the East management and leadership allowed us to go to Guyana, South America to perform.
Right.
And this is, like I said, the core group of it was my family. My sister was my dancing partner, and my brothers were drummers. And they used to also do a boot dance, a South African boot dance, and they did martial arts. So we did all of this. The black arts were strong at the East.
Very strong.
And plus they had other artists, Bobby Ishangi and his family, Chief J and his people, Denny Zulu, You know, and his family came through to perform. There were so many people of the arts that was at the East. Sonia Sanchez came
right.
to
great
mm-hmm.
poet.
The poetess. You know, of course,
Jane Cortez.
Absolutely. What so many powerhouses in black theater, in black art, in dance mm-hmm. and music was at the East.
And you know, what's so interesting, none of that was a hero worshiping kind of thing. These were folks that were willing to, like you said, sit down and talk with you on the street corner and come up and go in the bar and, you know, just sit there and and share with you
and
at that time.
To nation building.
Right.
And a brother just texted me and asked that we mention the National Black United Front.
Black Theater, yes.
Right.
Barbara Ann Tibb, National Black Theater. Yes.
Right, great. Okay.
The National Black United Front.
You know, there's so many areas we can go with this. And like I said, the time is moving, Sister.
I'm going to go to you and ask you what you just answered, Sister Malika, because I remember you. I actually idolized you when I was a child, when I was young, leaping up in the air. This sister is a phenomenal dancer.
All right.
There's a picture of it around. There's a picture of it.
Yep, that's it.
All right.
Okay, I want to ask this question before we open up the lines for our audience. There's two questions that I want to ask. The first one is, okay, a community group is going to get together and look at the model of the school and look at what the possibility of doing something like this in their community. Now, Brother Maliki told us one thing that they could do is get with the politicians, see what kind of buildings demand to be able to be a recipient of some of that vacant property that's sitting around. That's a great idea. But I can see now sitting in a room of folks getting together, and the first question will come up, well, where are we going to get the money from? How are we going to get the money? You know, and that all.
Dig in everybody's pocket and get the money.
Well, go ahead.
We're going to dig in everybody's pocket. The politicians, all of those who saying they're for the community, put up or shut up.
Gotcha. Well, let me ask this. Let me say this.
We need some people who are very good in writing grants. Also.
Okay. Okay.
So we need to be covering all fronts. All fronts on the economic front. We need to be writing grants. We need to be getting the people in the community.
Right.
But once we create these things that the people need, now you're getting their economics. They're
gotcha.
Coming. They're paying for entertainment. They're paying for the newspaper. They're paying in the health food store. Now the money is moving in the black circle.
Exactly. Okay, the second question. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
We also must remember that a lot of the nation building endeavors was independently run, economically speaking, by those involved.
I like that.
Because we did not want any government. We didn't want any government interfering.
I like
to
that.
Tell us
right.
what to do. We wanted to be Kujichagulia, self-determining about how we wanted to operate and to serve our community. And this is why for the Uhura Sasa, they had the fundraiser, which started the African Street Carnival.
Yes.
And that was such a huge success. You see how it has advanced itself to be international now, the International African Art Festival. And this was started with our own money, within our own circle, within our own organization, as an independent source of black power.
Economic black power.
And I think that this is how it has to start, sure. And maybe branch out, you know, but we have to be very careful about where you getting your money from.
Right.
Exactly.
Because you do.
Whoever you getting the money from, they want to have a say in how things are going to operate.
Right.
They surely do.
Right.
And that leads to my second question, is how were you able to navigate the Board of Education to go along with what you were doing to make sure that the young people that were graduating, you know, were being accepted in other schools and universities and things of that nature? How did you navigate?
Can I answer that?
Yes.
Well, Raphael, could you address
as
that?
As a graduate, can I answer that? As a former graduate, when I was there, it wasn't accredited. So when we left, when we, so to speak, graduated from there, we still had to take our GED to get our diploma and then move on from there. So that's how that was, because it was completely independent from the public school system.
Okay, excellent.
Go ahead, Raphael.
Now, my daughter graduated from there, took all the tests, and was pumped 2 grades higher.
Mm.
See, we get so hung up into this ideology. If you can read and write and do math, you can do the test.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How the test go? Those kids at East were knocking those test scores out. So it didn't matter. Look, you're going to go to college or high school, and I said, well, what's this kid got in math? He's got an A in math, and he can do algebra. He can do calculus. What, they teaching that down there? Yes, they are. Out smoking the kids in the public school. See, this is the thing. We did not give a damn what the public school was doing.
Yeah.
They weren't in our radar.
Right.
G2 said we had to surpass them.
G2 said we got to do better. And the money. Let me tell you the money. The building that we got.
Mm-hmm.
We put our summer money together and bought the building. The kids bought the building.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask for any grants or anything like that or any fun. The money came from us. We went in our pockets.
Today,
you've got our people making lots of money.
I love it.
Yeah.
Lots of money. Today, no excuses.
Yeah.
Today, no excuse.
Mm.
Right. Absolutely. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take some sacrifice on our part as a people in order to build our own. It's going to take some economic sacrifice. But it's going to pay off in the long run, because it's about upliftment and raising consciousness, and to be able to be self-sufficient as people of African descent here in the West.
Right.
But let me say this. We got to have our priorities right. That's why we have to have organization and unity. Because our people, we all know, spend a whole lot of money on sneakers and nails and hair and sports and TVs to watch sports. We keep this economy going. So it's about priorities. What's more important, your child's education, being educated by people who care about you, learning who you actually are, or these material things?
Right.
That's why the Nguzu Saba is a very critical foundational principles to do this nation building.
Beautiful.
We had a sister from our summer program became a teacher in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. Okay? And you know what she said to me? She tell her students, there's more to life than a Nike sneaker.
All right. Okay, Sister Yana, are you ready to open the lines? Let's see if we can somehow.
We open the lines.
Yes. One other quick thing. Puerto Ricans, who also are of African descent, they also were part of the East. And G2. So
They're African. They're African too.
Yeah, they're African. And Puerto Ricans were involved. As a matter of fact, some of them, in G2's writings, he says some of them were actually sent to Puerto Rico because of their activism.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they did sacrifice.
All right. Let's
Felipe
go to
Luciano, the young lord. Felipe Luciano. Young
oh, yeah.
Lord.
Love
right.
that. Yep. Check. Yep. Okay. Let's open up. I'll take the calls based on the way that they came in. Brother Kwasi Kraft, how are you doing? You were one of the first ones to call in.
All right.
Good.
What's up, everybody?
Any questions or comments, Brother Kwasi?
I'm just loving and enjoying this reunion of knowledge and just bringing it up forward. So thank you. Thank you for sharing this.
Okay, great.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Kwasi Kraft.
It's not just the reunion. This one is laying out the blueprint for black folk to emulate
and
build.
Exactly. Brother Kwasi Kraft, he does the Warrior's Way on Thursday evenings at 6:00. Thank you so much. Brother Herbie White, how you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and good evening to your guests. It's just wonderful just sitting here listening to all the things that they're talking about. You know, I wasn't actually part of any of that, but I was in Brooklyn at that time. I was born and grew up in Brooklyn, lived there all my life, so I know about every place that they're talking about and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful hearing what they were doing at that time, because I was on the streets of Brooklyn. And Brooklyn was wild back then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that, you know, to know that something like that was going on is you know.
But not as wild as it is right now, brother.
Oh, yeah. I'm
with
sure.
Identification.
I'm sure. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Brother White. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Let's go to 414-507. Questions or comments, caller?
Yeah, I just have a question. You were naming a lot of affiliations. Were you aware of the Black Library and Topographical Research Center?
Yes, I went there. I went there in Chicago. I went there.
All right.
Hey.
Yes, sir, brother. I went there. I took a trip there with the Vassar students. And Ozzie Davis' daughter was at the school at that time at Vassar College. And we took a trip there, yes.
Wow.
Man, I learned so much from them. In fact, I based my life philosophy on what I learned through the Black Library and Topographical Research Center.
All right.
Heavy stuff, brother, heavy stuff. Heavy
All right,
stuff
beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful. All right, thank you, Brother LaRue. Appreciate it. Let's go to our next caller. 252-474, Newbern, North Carolina.
Hey, how y'all doing this evening, brother?
Oh, good way, my brother. How you doing?
I just echo what somebody else saying. They just laid down the blueprint for his brothers and sisters here in the grassroots.
All right.
Thank you, God. I feel like I got them on my team here.
All right.
Y'all have a good evening. Thank you,
good brother. And by the way, this brother is out of Newbern, North Carolina, and he's building real big time. He's putting together some solid stuff, and I could see a project like this taking legs in Newbern working with someone like him. He's really doing it.
That's Newbern.
Yeah, Newbern, North Carolina, over there on the coast.
Newbern, yeah.
Yeah, by the coast, yeah. Okay, Philadelphia.
Down here where Walt Bellamy is from.
Okay.
Oh.
All right, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Brother Timothy.
Yes, sir. You know, brother, this is so wonderful. You know, Sister Benice, I see what you made of. I always thought you were made of this. I know it now for real. The proof is in the pudding. It's all good. But listen, I'm going to say this to you, that in Philadelphia, we have the same things going on.
Okay.
You know, just like people knew that Jeremiah Sebastian Ray Cook connected with Reverend Leon Sullivan, a Christian and a Muslim getting together all the time. That was not an odd thing in Philadelphia. People tried to make it seem like it was. We had model cities and cedar programs here. Mm-hmm. You know, we had independent schools. Same thing you're talking about. We had Mary Baraka here and the arts movement, and I can relate to all that you're saying. The thing is, and the brother talked about the Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey,
One second, there's background noise. Can you hold 1 second?
Yeah, sure. There's somebody was coming online. They were making noise. Okay. Go right ahead.
Yeah, the brother talked about messengers and machine, Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey. That's what we talk about. This is a wonderful conversation that we had. The whole thing is getting the people and the consciousness back together and bringing them in. You know what I'm saying? Because spontaneously, this thing was going around in the United States, whether we realize it or not. Chicago,
brother, what school did Churchville have in Philadelphia? Brother Churchville had independent black school. What school was that? Liberation School or something? Brother Churchville, he was teaching, had an independent black school.
We had John Skeef and the Bivens, Dr. and Mr. Bivens. They had independent schools, exactly. John Skeef had started it and had moved on to other things. And after that, independent schools had started. So I'm familiar with him. He was, matter of fact, my advisor and teacher when I was at West Lipford High School. For me, I went to Lincoln University. He was a Cheney graduate. So the whole thing was this, you know, it was so connected. All we got to do is just hook up and connect.
Right.
That's the whole thing. Right. And we can do it. It can be done. All we got to do is keep moving. And you got the blueprint, like you said, Sister Benisa, you got the blueprint. There are blueprints all around the country. Let's put all the blueprints together.
Beautiful.
Educate, and organize. Agitate, organize.
Beautiful.
That's
right. All right. Thank you, Brother Timothy. Appreciate that. Montgomery, Alabama, Brother Lush.
Good evening, everyone. I'm still feeling the energy from the African-American Empowerment Saturday. I heard these guys earlier. And so I'd just like to offer my services as a tutor whenever anything starts to kick off and get this show on the road.
All right.
Wonderful. All right.
Wonderful.
Beautiful. Beautiful, yeah. My brother. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, Durham, North Carolina, 919-224. 919-224. Are you listening? Are you just
Bruce?
I don't know if it's Bruce yet. No, I don't know yet. 919-224. Okay, I guess they're just listening. Okay, New York City, 917-561. New York City, 917-561.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. This is Brother Imari.
Hey.
Online.
Hey.
Barigani, Brother Imari.
Barigani, my brother.
Barigani,
mm-hmm.
Everybody. Yep. I was down with the East from the days of ASA up until being a graduate of Uhuru Sasa.
Beautiful.
And I'd like to make a quick comment. One of the things to understand about the East was that it was started by educators. So we always were encouraged to keep our heads in a book. We were always encouraged to be about excellence, as Brother Maliki said. We were always encouraged to keep learning. And we did that. And a lot of us went on to be extremely successful in our chosen paths of careers and so forth. And, you know, that's just the foundation that we had from right there on Clever Place.
And what is your career today, Brother Maury?
I'm the Chief Technology Officer for WBGO Jazz Station out of Newark currently. I've had a long career for the past 40 years in broadcasting.
Okay.
And that was, that was as a foundation of being at the East.
Hmm.
Beautiful.
Go.
Beautiful.
Go.
Doc.
Okay, yes.
Before we end, I'd like to ask our participants, Brother Maliki, Malika, and Raphael, what the East did for them in terms of having successful careers.
Okay, all right. We got a couple more people, and then I'll come back, and you can pose that question. Area code 240-351, Washington, D.C. 240-351.
I don't have no comment.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you for listening. Area code 414-324. Area code 414-324.
Hey, Doc. How you doing?
Fine, my brother. How you doing today, Oshi?
I'm doing well. Hello, family. Peace, family.
Peace,
yeah. Yeah. This is an outstanding topic and many contributors and to reminisce about the East.
Right.
And, of course, the National Black United Front, which I was familiar with. That's how I met G2Y Uzi and the many of the other brothers and sisters from New York and other parts of the country with the National Black United Front.
Mm-hmm.
And the chairman emeritus, who's now also an ancestor of Brother Dr. Conrad World, you know. Mm-hmm. And we need organization.
Mm-hmm.
And this talk this evening is the start and spark of organization, an organization that is going to deal with independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. We need this. I've been sending out a piece that I got on the riches of Africa, the 10 countries with the richest mineral wealth, and it's sad and sick that we don't control this.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why we don't control this
mm-hmm.
is because we don't have functional unity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we keep talking about all these so-called falsely sovereign countries in Africa. Those countries aren't sovereign in Africa. Those countries are manipulated, undermined with despots and and people who are ripping the masses off, along with the puppets and the neo-colonialists. That's what's happening.
Right.
We need real leadership. We need a new leadership in Africa and for Africans in the diaspora.
Right.
We need Africans in the diaspora to come to the continent to bring those skills.
Yeah.
Africa needs infrastructure. It needs roads, highways, ports, schools, hospitals, towns. It's so much.
Yes.
And everything that we need, we have. If we just wake up and come together.
Right. That's right.
And people who have those skills and resources, bring them. So we can kick the Chinese out. The Chinese have already did a Berlin conference on Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Chinese are about in 20-something countries, already took the airport in Zambia.
Huh.
They're in 20-something countries. I'm saying, you know, you got the Chinese, you got the Indians, you got the Caucasians, and you have them damn Arabs. All of them need to go. And they can go if we unite. But
right.
The problem is that this, I'm sorry, Doc.
No, I'm just saying, you're right.
Yeah. You know.
And Brother Oshie.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, this is what I talk about every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on my program on Time for an Awakening. This is what I talk about. Because to me, there's no other subject.
We are
in a serious situation as a people. Because the people who are in control of this world are some evil-ass people with designs on population control and particularly to eliminate us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are the ones who are deeply melanated. We are the ones who have the original DNA of humanity. We are the ones. And so, to me, we can't die, but we can be marginalized and manipulated and scrutinized.
Right.
We can't die.
Beautiful.
You know?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Because see, that's why the viruses not hit Africa as hard as it has hit in other places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
See, so, but you know.
You know, it's interesting what you're saying, because I got a text today from a brother in Nigeria that I know and I talk to on Facebook a lot. He teaches at the University of Nigeria. His name is Benjamin Olori, and this is what he said. Let me read this real quickly. He said African nations depend solely on Europe and Asia for survival in terms of production and manufacturing of machines. He said our leaders are stupid. That they don't think positively except the late Nelson Mandela, he said. He said, apart from the question that I raised earlier, this group, meaning that our group tonight, because he was responding to our discussion, this group, he said, should organize a revolution not of crisis but of development of Africans through sound education. We need people like Walter Rodney and those that can bring real production to Africa.
Yes.
That's what he said. He's in Nigeria now.
It is on point.
Yes.
We need African union. A real African union where to say it's not about ignorance.
Your phone is, for those you, your phone is doing something.
Can you hear me now?
It's going in and out.
Yeah.
Oshie?
Is that better?
A little better.
Okay. But what I was saying is we need African leadership. We need African leadership and the people, the brothers and sisters on the continent and those of us in diaspora.
Right.
Just like Sister Arkina is talking about. Colonialism. We are deeply, deeply fragmented. You know, and many of us still believe that it is best for us in the West. It is good for England and France. And whatever.
Okay, it's doing that. Yeah, his phone is breaking up real bad. Brother Ocean. Plus, we've got I've got to go. We got one more caller from Albuquerque, okay. Albuquerque, okay. New Mexico, 505-340. Albuquerque, New Mexico,
505-335-333. Yeah, I'm glad to have Ocean on the air, because I listen to him
religiously every Monday,
Wednesday, and Friday. Beautiful. But that said, I was born and raised in Best. I live in New Mexico now, but I grew up with Tito Wahusi. His name is Leslie Campbell. We used to call him Soup. See?
Yeah.
We grew
yeah.
up playing basketball. I'm a basketball, former basketball coach. I know G2 when he was 10 years old, but we're the same age. See?
Mm-hmm.
Now, G2 made a declaration in my car. We wanted to hear Rap Brown speak in Harlem. I think it was in 67. And G2, me and him went up to see Rap Brown, and he decided in the ride from Bedford Avenue up to, I think we went up to 135th, 138th, there was a ballroom or something that Rap was speaking in, and on the way back in the car going back to Brooklyn, G2 made a declaration in my 65 Mustang, and he said, from now on, I'm not going to no parties. I'm mm-hmm. not hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he ran it down. You understand what I'm saying? Now, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. He became G2 later, but check this out. When we were growing up playing ball, G2 was the intellect of the basketball crowd. You understand? The first time I ever heard the word racism, I didn't know what that meant. I said to Leslie, I said, yo, man, but we always went to him for definition.
Yeah.
I said, yo, what is that? What is that? What does that mean?
What does it mean?
We were down at LIU playing ball, formerly the Paramount Theater, now it's LIU, Long Island.
Yeah, that's where he got his scholarship.
Right,
that's where
right.
He got his scholarship.
Wait a minute, let me finish, man. I know the whole, listen, don't tell me nothing about him, but here's the deal. He sat me down and gave me a lesson. I'll never forget this as long as I live. He broke the whole racism thing. I had no idea what that word meant.
Mm.
And I used to run into him all the time. He had a health food store one time, I think on Claver and Fulton somewhere.
That's what we're talking about, brother. That's what we're talking about.
I just turned on. I didn't get the beginning of the show. I'm just telling you my experience growing up with Leslie Campbell. He also did. He's G2YOC now. But we knew each other when we were teammates.
Wow.
You understand what I'm saying? But he was the cat. Basketball players, primarily intellectually, are not real swift upstairs. But they focus on ball. But G2, Leslie, he did ball and he was intellectual.
Yeah.
And we all, whenever there was a problem, a society problem, especially with the cops back in the day, we went to him. We sit down, after we finished playing ball, we got some soda and sit down in the park, soda in the hole, wherever we were. And he gave us the rundown. I said, what is this? What does that mean? What's going on over here? He was our information bureau.
Mm.
But I grew up with, listen, ain't nothing you can tell me about him, because I knew him since he was 10.
All right.
But that said, I live out here. Does anybody have a number? They just came out with a book. My father is a Gullah man from Hilton Head, South Carolina. They just came out with a book not long ago, and I would like to pass that book around. Y'all, any numbers, somebody I can call, one of them sisters, Malika, I heard them say Malika, you know what I mean? But I want other people, especially back, I go to the home front, back in Bed-Stuy, to get a copy of this book. I'll even send a couple of copies to people. I'm
right,
buy
Dr. Rogers, you got it.
Yep, I do, right here, okay. And I got his number. Should I use the 505 number, my brother?
Yeah, you can call me anytime. What is your name, man?
William Rogers. I do the broadcast every Tuesday from 7 to 9.
Okay. Well, you give me a call whenever. I'll get back to you. I want to get some of these books out in the public because my father was raised in Hilton Head, South Carolina. He's a Gullah man. And the book just came out. I don't know exactly when it came out, but I just got a copy of a couple of days ago.
Okay.
But it's just so fantastic how the Africans came from West Africa to the Bushy Islands, all these islands down there in South Carolina, how they brought rice to this country, showed these clowns how to grow rice, the whole nine. And I want to get that book out there because my father's family is the Robinson family. They're in that book.
Okay.
So you give me a call.
I will call you tomorrow. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Listen, the program is fantastic. The East, I remember when they put the East together. I mean, they eat over there by that Catholic school they are. Claver. I can't remember. Over there by Franklin Avenue. The East.
St. Peter's Claver.
Claver, whatever. Charles Tolliver. Because I used to play trumpet with Charles Tolliver and Gary Bartz. We had a ball back then. We had a ball.
All right.
Anyway, give me a call, Brother Rogers.
Yes, Rogers. William Rogers. I will.
Give me a call, man.
I will. I will definitely call you tomorrow. And I know you had some. You've got some family in North Carolina, too, don't you? Don't you have some family in Durham?
Family all over the place. My mother is from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, the same place Thelonious Monk is from.
Yep, I remember you told me that.
Now, I knew the Monk family as a kid growing up. See, listen, I need to write a book myself.
You sure should. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Write the book and send it on to us.
I will call you.
We need all the involvement we can get.
All right.
Rogers, right?
Yes, Rogers.
I ride horses in the morning. I ride up in the mountains in the morning, say from 7 to about 10.
Okay.
Every other morning. Because horses, I've always ridden horses. Basketball was my thing, but I always rode horses. So if I don't pick up, just leave a message and a number. I'll get right back to you. Because I want people to read this book.
I got you. I'm going to get to you.
Thank you, brother, for your call.
Okay. Okay, Sister Benicia. Yeah, I was telling Sister Benicia, we kind of at the closing hour, and she wanted to get a couple of things.
Okay.
I want to ask our guests, our brothers and our revolutionaries, what did the East do for you in terms of your current careers?
Well, I'll start out and just say that I was a very good typist coming into the East, and of course, GQ did pick up on that. And I did become his secretary, as well as I did work for Black News, and I was taught typesetting by the beautiful sister Akilah Mashariki, and so I was able to take that skill of typesetting. It's all different now, and everybody's a typesetter now based upon these word programs and that we have going on. But I was doing that for a while after leaving the East. You know, I'm retired right now, but since I have been in retirement, I have been writing. I did write my memoirs, and I am working on certain projects for other people right now in writing and journalism. And so the East, I contribute a lot to the East for helping me to build my skills in terms of administration, in terms of management, in terms of organizational leadership. So that's what I say is one of the main things that the East has helped in my career, professional career.
I say. Brother Raphael.
Well, I'm a retired professor of history, and I got the framework from G2. You know, a lot of times you learn stuff, but you don't have a framework. Mm. I learned how mm-hmm. to analyze movies
mm-hmm.
and television shows, mm-hmm. And then when I went away to college, I took the East with me. I went to the State University of New York at Albany, and we founded the Black Weekend, and we had Pharoah Sanders up there. We did everything that the East did. We had a magazine. We had the first black newspaper among the state universities. It was called Kujichagulia. Mm. Our magazine was called NIA. You know, so I took that wherever I went. And when I went into the colleges, did the same thing. So G2 and the East, I've always been a natural organizer. And this does show, one of the things that it showed me, and Maliki will attest to this, when he showed me that building on 10 Claver Place, it was a piece of garbage. My heart dropped. Mm. I said, oh my God, we bought this?
Yeah.
But what he showed me was how we transformed that. So anytime I look at a building now, I don't look at the condition that it's in, I look at how you can do it,
right.
How you can fix it, that, you know, that can-do spirit. And one of the things that I just remembered, when G2, he called me when I was back in New York, and he said, I'm teaching a course at a college. I can't do it. I want you to do it. I was floored.
Hmm.
Brother, you want me to? Brother, this little 10-year-old kid that you knew, you want me to follow in your foot? So G2 is... He's the world of me. Hmm. He's the world of me.
Hmm.
He's the world of me. So, a lot of stuff that I do is because of G2.
Hmm.
The boldness, you know. And so that's...
Okay. You got 4 minutes, Sister Yon.
All right, Maliki?
Yeah, well, G2, WBAI radio station needed some volunteers. And G2 told me to go up there and volunteer. And I went right into the music department, and they were doing a lot of classical music. Of course, setting up the music on the weekends, I became an audio engineer. I went right into the music department, and I start working. They're doing live recordings on the weekends, and they bought a church. They were using the church to do the recording. A lot of classical, a lot of folk. And then, of course, you know, I had the opportunity to go on to ABC Network Television and work on some of the great shows, Good Morning America, All My Children, 2020, Nightline, all of those shows. And I worked with Peter Jennings for about 10 years. So that G2 just gave us all everything that we needed to be equipped on in life, you know. And
That's powerful.
For me, I'm very similar to Brother Raphael, minus the professor. I moved to North Carolina and also did a lot of replication of what I saw as nation building that I got from the East. I brought it to North Carolina and replicated many of the arts, the organization, the promoting of the Nguzu Saba, and our work. People from in the South here, I thought the South was like tired bumpkins and whatnot. But everything we did grew and grew and grew. We outgrew every building, every cultural event we did. It was all cultural and educational. People would pack the place. So that showed me that our people are hungry to be together, work together, and build together.
Yes,
that's why I focus on nation building, because our people want it. And those of us that have done it, we need to show them and work with them on how to replicate what was done. Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I'm retired, and what I do now is I help many of the black churches with their sound systems.
Beautiful.
That's what I do.
Beautiful. Okay, thank you so much, my brothers and sisters. This has been seriously rewarding, and I hope that some of our listeners got some motivation and some thoughts that can help you put something like this together in your community. It doesn't take a miracle, just hard work, vision, like these brothers and sisters and their organizer did. So we really appreciate you all. Thank you so much, Brother Maliki, for helping organize this together. Sister Yan, love you to death. Thank you so much for what you do, what you have done. Next week, we'll be back. I think Sister Yan is going to produce another program for us dealing with opportunities in industrial centers.
Question mark there.
I'm sorry?
Question mark there. Not sure yet. Not sure yet.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, if not, then thank you so much. We'll be here next Tuesday with something. And very clearly, please join us. I appreciate it.
And
have a wonderful
one. Sister Malika and Brother Raphael for their contribution.
Thank you.
Yes, have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Sister Bonita.
Okay.
Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings to all of you.
Remember, this is the Black Blueprint. Ashe.
Yep.
Ashe.
Here we go. Gary Bond.
One of the artists that came ready.
Filthy battles no more, hell no, 'cause I've got some.